Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on Friday, August 19th. I'm going to be presenting some very important ideas today. At least I think they're important. This is not lightweight stuff. It is, in essence, the method and mode of enslavement that we have been corralled into. I use that word because it can be likened to being herded into holding pens after a series of shocks and defeats. Or in other cases, some of us were given the impression of victory, but which also came with much shock and loss. I'm going to be talking from the point of view of the defeated Germans, but realize that I'm really talking about all of us, and that means you. So I'm continuing to read from Manfred Kleine Hartlage's article, which I started yesterday. It is part one of a three-part article on Deutschfeindlichkeit, or hostility toward things German, or just called Germanophobia, which is a typical term, but it means a kind of a hatred of Germany and Germans, or you might think of it as less than a, not as strong a word as hatred, but it's kind of hard. It's, you know, hostility or dislike. Now, his three-part article can be found at http://correcttitan.com. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. And this website is in German, but it does have the option to do an automatic translation of everything on it, which is not very good. But anyway, the spelling of this website, in case anyone is interested or in case you read German, is http, as I said, /. KORREKTHEITEN.com. I'll say that again, KORREKTHEITEN.com. So, I left off yesterday describing two utopian and one non-utopian worldviews. These are, according to Manfred, liberalism and socialism on the one hand, the two utopians, and what is variously called conservatism, reaction, or simply the political right, on the other hand. Both of the utopian revolutionary ideologies, regardless of their differences, have identifiable similarities, by which they are so fundamentally distinguishable from the right that they can be traced back to a common ideology, which he calls a meta-ideology. He says this is true, particularly of the utopian approach, and the utopian approach assumes that possibility of peaceful and civilized coexistence of mankind is not a miracle requiring some elaborate explanation, but is rather something that can be taken for granted as a matter of course. For this reason, one does not have to elaborate on the foundations of society itself. One can devote oneself immediately to the realization of paradise on earth, either through gradual reform or revolutionary violence. Now, remember, this is the utopian approach. Now, he says the utopian ideologies imply a number of assumptions. I'm going to be going to a break in a moment, but here it comes. All right, we're going to continue with this idea of the utopian versus the conservative worldview when we come back from this commercial break in 3 minutes. Be right back.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager, and I want to remind you that the phone number here to call in is 1-800-313-9443. I do welcome calls today on this subject. So, or maybe things that I've talked about during the week. But I will now continue with what I think I'm not just filling in here on this Friday. I think this is very important and very, very interesting. And I have a lot to say about it, and maybe, you know, continuing on other programs. So I will say that I was saying that Manfred's article in part one, he continues saying the utopian ideologies imply a number of assumptions. Firstly, utopian societies hold that man is by nature good. Social conditions, that is inequality and lack of freedom, conditions of inequality and lack of freedom, are responsible for the existence of evil and therefore must be banished. The right-wing approach, which Manfred believes is the correct approach, is that man is incomplete and weak and mired in original sin and therefore reliant on the existence of a social order to support him. Therefore, a certain measure of coercion, or coercion is not a word that we would use in English, but it's a word that's used in German. So I should just leave that out and say a certain measure of restriction of freedom, or coercion means just more like laws, you know, things that people are required to do, must be accepted or are considered necessary, because the alternative is not freedom and equality if you don't have, you know, any restriction of freedom. As in liberty, equality, and fraternity, as relating back to the French Revolution, that's where that phrase came, that was the calling cry of the French revolutionaries, liberty, equality, fraternity. But he says it doesn't lead to that, but rather to chaos, violence, and barbarism. And I talked yesterday of how the French Revolution was an event, and it continued for years, of chaos, violence, and barbarism. I mean, it unleashed lawlessness on a huge degree, and it changed everything in Europe. And of course, I could go into who was behind all that, but I think I'm not going to do that because that's a whole different other topic in a sense. So now, secondly, utopian societies hold that society can be rationally planned. Its form is a matter of reason and enlightenment. The political right, by contrast, assumes that society depends on the unquestioned validity of what has gone before, and it is not to be questioned, such as the concepts of family, faith, tradition, and fatherland. These can indeed be damaged or destroyed by criticism, but they cannot logically be replaced by anything better. This is what he says. There's really nothing better than that. Thirdly, utopian societies hold that the good, freedom and equality, is rationally deducible or derivable. It follows also that it is culturally independent and universally valid. That is that no matter where you go and who you're dealing with, it all holds true. freedom and equality is the good. Now this, we hear this all the time. This is nothing. This is the world that we live in. This is the thought that we're given from our earliest schooling and maybe as soon as we start learning anything. So this is the sea that we swim in. And so we're all very familiar with this without really thinking it through too much, which is what's going on here. So I'll continue. For this reason, Manfred writes, talking about the utopian view, all mankind can be saved or redeemed if one can globally bring about the utopias that are derived from Enlightenment principles. Now, I have a little comment in here that I stuck in the other day. I have to say that these are the church's principles also. And this is something, I'm not totally in agreement with Manfred because I'll just throw in here, because I do bring up Hitler, that National Socialism, because he is talking about from the perspective of Germany and German history, and National Socialism was not conservative per se, and didn't follow the ideas that Manfred is putting forth here as to the conservative, which is the alternative to the liberal utopian. National Socialism, and I brought that out yesterday in this article in the New American Magazine about how they want to ban the National Democrat, I guess it's called the National Party of Germany, the NPD. Right-wing party in Germany, because they just want to. The left wants to just ban it now, not allow it to exist. And in that article, they brought out that National Socialism they considered it a middle way. It wasn't left or right, and that's actually true. It's a unique formulation, is what it is in my opinion, But I won't go into that anymore here, except to continue with what I wrote here, said that every religion promises a utopia. In my mind, not a utopia on this earth, but an eventual utopia. But Hitler never did so. He always said life is a struggle. This is seeing ourselves connected to nature as against the religious world of spirit, the miraculous world, where we believe in miracles via God, and that these miracles, this world of spirit doesn't follow any laws, and people are always saying God can do anything. It doesn't matter what the laws of this world are. God can is not held by those. That's the general idea. Now, Hitler promised honor, pride, Volk, blood and soil, as something to be highly desired. To me, the church may be conservative, but it is still not opposed to the utopian ideologies. The only reason it is because they want to these utopian ideologies want to destroy the church, and they want to be the only true religion. But I think that I think that when we talk about the world to come or what we talk about after death, we really don't know, although I have my own ideas, but I wouldn't call it necessarily a utopia. In fact, I wouldn't call it a utopia at all. My ideas for the life, after death is not hell for anyone, but it's also not utopia. So, all right, I'm going to continue now with Monfred's words. He writes, for conservatives, on the other hand, every culture is a unique or unplannable, unrepeatable answer to the elementary question of how society is possible, or how an ordered society is possible. Because, you know, the only kind of society you want to live in is an orderly society. You certainly don't want to live in a disorderly society. Those were my words. But going back to Monfred, they emphasize the right of the particular as opposed to universal ideology's claim of validity. Now he says, fourthly, utopian societies hold that one has to define and analyze society from the standpoint of utopia, that is, the standpoint of norms rather than facts, from what should be rather than what is, and from rights rather than duties. Now, this brought to my mind when he said rights rather than duties, when he said what should be rather than what is, it brought to my mind Robert Kennedy and that phrase that he said in a speech, which people attribute to him, but actually was taken from George Bernard Shaw. But it's paraphrasing. It goes something like this. There are those that look at things the way they are and ask why. I dream of things that never were and ask why not. Well, Robert Kennedy has been given all kinds of accolades for saying that, and it's often repeated and it's highly associated with him. But Robert Kennedy was a utopian liberal, and even though he was a Catholic. So the Kennedys were kind of a strange group. I used to have the kind of, that kind of, worshiping, not, it wasn't worship, but this great liking for the Kennedys. I've grown out of that now, and I look at them more objectively. And I don't care too much for Robert Kennedy's message, but at all. But, that's just an example of this idea of I dream of things that never were and ask why not. And of course, when I said he's a Catholic, well, as I said, the church also has its utopian vision. And I don't think the church is too far away from the left, which is why it's gone to the left. So in this sense, I might argue with Monfred on this little bit, but I also may not know exactly where he's coming from and what he's, he's a pretty smart guy, but still in all, there's not much more I can say about that. So now I am in the Google translation. That's the end of where this friend of mine translated it, and he didn't send me any more. So I'm doing my best, and I've kind of worked it out. I've left some parts out because I just couldn't figure out exactly, but I don't think they're too important because I've got the main points here. So I will continue. We're about ready to go to the break. The understanding of the utopian society is consequently an apocalyptic understanding of politics. All right. Well, we're going to continue with this when we come back from this break.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, the government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper. Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Berkey Purification Systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. Berkeys are used worldwide under normal, hostile, and emergency environments. Securing your access to good-tasting, sparkling, wholesome drinking water can be harder than you might expect. Water is often laced with chlorine, lead, high levels of harmful bacteria, and other unwanted chemicals and contaminants. Even bottled water can contain these contaminants, and moreover, it's expensive. Other purification systems are inferior. Most do remove pathogenic bacteria, and many remove the beneficial minerals that your body needs. Perhaps that's why Berkey systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. This simple, highly effective method of microporous, self-sterilizing, and recleanable black Berkey purification elements bring you the finest water purification system available anywhere. Call today, 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Free shipping for a limited
All right, welcome back. This is Carolyn Yeager. I am talking about the utopian versus the conservative point of view. Reading from Manfred Hartler, Kleine Hartlegger's article. And it is translated from German. And I'm going to continue now. The understanding of the utopian society is consequently an apocalyptic understanding of politics. That policy was a battle between the forces of light and darkness. Again, you know, this is me now. This sounds like the church, the battle between light and darkness. He continues, war is not about a tragic, ultimately inescapable doom. It is justified if it leads to revolutionary objectives. And then I think the word is crime, every crime is allowed. It comes to the medium. That's where I don't have that worked out too well. As I told you, I had to get this from the Google Translator, and some of it I was able to work out, and some of it I wasn't. So he says, what has all this to do with Deutschfeindlichkeit or hostility to Germans? Now he says, going on into now the relevant part here, if the wars of the 20th century are regarded as parts of ideological world civil war. Now, this is a good idea he's putting forth here, and this will come up again and again. Ideological world civil war, the wars of the 20th century, speaking mainly of World War I, World War II. And then the wars that have followed since in the 20th century, although a lot of these newest wars started in the 21st century, so maybe they're not included. He says, then we obviously embodied the German Rights Party, the idea that wars would lead to the global implementation of a per se good order, as it was the understanding of utopian politics and as a liberal world order by the Western powers, As a communist world order was later sought by the Soviet Union, Germany had to be alien. Okay, well, you know, the utopians, the liberal socialists and communists, I would say, but he really separates that, the Western utopians from the Soviet Union type communists. So I don't want to confuse things here. So cross that out. He says that these wars, World War One, World War Two, would lead to this global implementation of the order that they wanted, what they consider the good order, or the order of freedom and equality, as it was the understanding of this was utopian politics by in the West. And then he says the communist world order was later sought by the Soviet Union, because of course it was World War One, at the end of World War One, that the communist revolution in Russia took place, and Russia became eventually the Soviet Union, and so then they had their own world order idea. So in this, he says Germany was alien to all of it. And my little note here is going back to David from San Francisco, who I played that clip from. He is the one who called into Deanna Spingola's program on Wednesday and showed hostility to Germany in an advanced degree. He also lauded the French Revolution as progressive and brilliant and brave and all of that, and Germany as lazy and cowardly. So this was, you know, he is very much a part of this, you know, speaking up for this left-wing or liberal socialist world order that represents, and against the what Germany stood for. Now, if already at Manfred continues, if already at the beginning of the 20th century, Germany was striving for world domination, which is what they like to say, it would have been even absurd. You know, he sees that as an absurd idea. He says a way of thinking. There's a sentence I had to leave out there, and then he says a way of thinking on the realization of a world order, which always aimed obvious nations that could pursue bold ideals, and was, and we can leave that out. The liberal new world order, which they had as an idea suitable even before the First World War, clearly emerged. It was also the suitable ideology for global imperialism. So this world order was just ready-made and properly prepared for a global imperialism, he says. Now, Germany, however, was almost the institutionalized counter-revolution. He says the German Empire was quite liberal, democratic, and even included socialist ideas, and that is well before Hitler. This was just built in to the German thinking. He says, just think of the Bismarck social legislation. All right, are you aware, some of you will be, that Bismarck, that famous German leader who unified Germany, was a Prussian, that he enacted some of the very first social legislation in the Western world or in Europe in the 1800s. All right, we will be back for our long segment in just a few minutes after these commercials.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Heart and Body Extract has a 23-year proven track record of using certified organic herbs that make up an excellent formula to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. In as little as 2 weeks, you can feel amazing results with your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
This is an important message from HempUSA.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit HempUSA.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid 3 times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
All right, well, we're back, and I want to remind you that the call-in number, I keep giving it out, but nobody calls. It's all right. Maybe you're listening carefully. The number, though, is 1-800-313-9443. Now, continuing with Manfred's article, part one, the German Empire, he says, was quite liberal, democratic, and even included socialist ideas. This is the German Empire that was brought together under Bismarck. And, of course, when Bismarck did this, this is when the rest of Europe, not everyone, but certainly Britain and France, began to get nervous because it looked like the Germans were they had united and they saw how strong they could be, and they saw it as competitors. But Manfred is taking this to another level, that it's not just Britain and France and their competitive ideas, but that it is a worldview ideology that was also functioning here and wanted to dominate. So the Germans didn't seem to be going along with that. Now, he says, but the Germans were liberal and democratic only on the condition of consolidating the existing order. They weren't wanting to change the existing order. Just to consolidate and improve in a gradual sense. They didn't, he says, under no circumstances should it blow up. That is, like in the French Revolution it did. This understanding of the policy and the rejection of revolutionary utopian designs was not only the policy of the conservatives in Germany, but also that of the liberals, and in the long run also that of the social democrats. The entire thinking in abstract ideals was simply alien in Germany. Now, he says, Germany was on the one hand too weak in compromise. This is, remember, I think he's going back to after World War I, but now he's moving up here. But Germany was on the one hand too weak in compromise to even follow the world domination desires. But it was at least potentially strong enough to draw Europe in its sphere of influence and thus achieve a world order to prevent it by others. That is, it was on an opposite path, you know, and it could influence in Europe, I don't know what he means by world order there, but a different kind of world order than the utopian world order. Now, he says, if in the war against Germany, after Winston Churchill's true words of 1914 to 45 took, led or brought about by no crimes of the Nazis. Now he's in this period, the Hitler period. Was it not a matter to force this Europe in the liberal world order, and thus at the same time in the Anglo-Saxon sphere of influence, rather than to protect Europe from the yoke of Germany? He's saying that the war against Germany under Winston Churchill, beginning of both World War One and World War Two, were brought about by no crimes of the Germans. This is one where I'm having a little trouble translating it. But he says what he is getting at is that it was it not just to force this Europe into the liberal world order, but at the same time into the Anglo-Saxon sphere of influence, to force Germany into the Anglo-Saxon sphere of influence, which was this liberal world order, rather than to protect Europe from the yoke of Germany. Well, we know that. That's the argument that what was the real reason? It certainly wasn't because the Nazis were a threat to anyone. That's the falsehood. Now, he says, Germany was not a universal principle to be achieved, but a specifically situated nation whose order and objectives were not utopian designs, but were derived from practical needs. It knew no abstract loyalty to liberal and democratic ideals. He says, I had to skip something, and then he says, what was defined as the state, or we, in quotes, was defended against the outside world by the Germans. This was interpreted then as nationalism. That is, because the Germans defended their own ways against those who were encroaching, wanted to, you know, force change on them, this was interpreted as nationalism. He says, Germany had to insist on the validity of community values rather than on individual claims. This is where the accusation against Germans that they're collectivist, you know, that they function in this old collectivist mentality. But he says it's about community values rather than every individual claiming his particular rights. He says such community ideals work only if they are emotionally anchored. Therefore, the cliche of the romanticism and irrationalism of Germans. So he's saying, you know, again, if you have, if you are a community, if you are a nation, and if you want to protect what you value about your culture and your nation and your people, et cetera, it has to be emotionally anchored in the people. Or it won't work. You know, they won't defend themselves if they don't have ideas about themselves, that, you know, an emotional feeling about their nation, their people. This goes back to the blood and soil, which is so vilified, and in my opinion should not be. So he says they then put these terms, which are really considered to be negative, you know, critical of Germans. Of that Germans are embroiled in romanticism, you know, German romanticism, and which ties in with irrationalism, that Germans are irrational. I think you would all be familiar with that. Now, he goes on, in short, the fact that the Germans were different. Now, you see, he's allowing for differences. In the utopian worldview, nobody is different. Everybody is the same, interchangeable. We all require freedom and equality. We're all equal. And so we're all going to just, you know, fit into this grand world order. But he is saying that Germans were different, and they differently thought, they were differently thought of from the Anglo-Saxons, that they had in particular no sense for the utopia, or maybe no feel or no attraction to the utopia. At the same time, they were a threat to the global implementation of this utopia, naturally, from the utopian's point of view. And this was made to the, this is a little confusing language here, to the counter history, created a counter history of Western revolutionary and utopian thinking, or they were seen to be counter to the Western revolutionary utopian thinking. Now, the stereotypes of the German national character represent the demagogic, distorted description of dispositions. They were and are actually present in this national character. He says these what have become stereotypes, like the romantic and the irrational and so on, he said are actually present in the national, in the German national character, but they're not necessarily express themselves in the way that the critics say, and they had also to be available. This is a little confusing again, because a country like Germany cannot afford the liberal globalism and utopianism. And then in parentheses, whether the Anglo-Saxons can afford it is for the first question. Whether he's just saying, you know, that this is something that is too costly to the national, to the national character. He's basically saying that Germany has its own unique character, and they would, which would be lost if they join up with this global utopian ideology. Very true. Okay. Now, that's the end of part one. I went to part two, and I have the Google translation, and I've just started going through it, but I'm going to do the best I can with this, because there's some very interesting ideas in here. It starts out with the heading Acquisition of Western Narrative by the Deutsch, or the Acquisition of the Western Narrative by Germany. After the Second World War, Germany came under the strong influence of American propaganda channels to create a fundamental change of political thought in Germany in the direction of the Anglo-Saxon ideology of revolutionary liberalism, later also of Marxism. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of water here. In any case, to take on the basic assumptions of the revolutionary meta-ideology, that is this meta-ideology of the socialist, liberal socialist point of view, and the universalist, egalitarian point of view, was being forced on Germany. he says, among other things, this implied that to accept a a distinction on an ideological rather than an ethnic or state basis as a matter of course. That is, what they're interested in is ideology rather than anything to do with your feelings about ethnicity or your ethnic sense or loyalty or even your ethnic reality or your state, which is your individual European state. It says we're no longer the Germans and not even the Europeans, in any case, not in the sense of a people's community, which then he says is under the word wir, W-I-R, is a German word, meaning we, but it means a larger we, like the people, the we the people. And you know, this relates to the American Constitution, which uses the term we the people, and in the United States, we hear that a lot, we the people, which is long ago been lost, but now it's I the individual and my rights, but anyway, this was a Monfort says this was the political party in the global ideological civil war. Again, we come back to that. He says, following that, the West, the Western community of values, the free world. Okay, we stopped being a people's communities, and we became identified. We were encouraged and forced to identify as the free world, you know, the West, versus Soviet Union, communism. Because by then the situation had changed, and now this liberal ideology was seeing itself as fighting communism, which was the Soviet system. You know, there's question about was this a real fight or was this a fraud? But in any case, this was the division that was made. And this is how we were encouraged to think. And of course, Germany was divided between the free West and the communist East, and so that was even more pointed to the Germans in their battle, the false propaganda that they were given, and all of the way they were being forced to, they were being reeducated. This has to do with the re-education, which, as I said, is ongoing. Now, this Vir, W-I-R, became, he says, those who shared the ideals of the utopian and revolutionary. Not we, the people's community, but we, the free world, the ideals of the utopian and revolutionary, and large parts of the left came to this after the fall of the Soviet Union. So when we had that break in 89-90, in Germany, the left and the West, which was also left, but came together, and this control of the left over Germany became, you know, pretty absolute. Now, such a definition of the we group, according to the criterion of ideological affiliation, meant a latent contradiction for the peoples of the victorious powers, not only for the Russians, more for Mother Russia. Well, now I'm in the part that I haven't even worked on yet. Well, looks like I might have a call. Save me from my, yes, okay. Well, hello, Dave from Massachusetts.
Hi, Carolyn. Hi. Yeah, you know, I was just going to listen, but then I figured I'd call in since nobody seems to be calling in. You know, they're, I'm sure there's people listening, but they're you know, maybe busy or something and can't call in. Hey, Carolyn?
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, and I don't know if there's a certain topic, but I wanted to talk about Hitler for a second. Would that be possible?
Yes, because I would like to talk about that too. And as I said, I kind of ran out of the part of this that I had tried to work on, and so it's really too confusing.
Okay, now when I run this past you, I want you to take me seriously, and I don't want you to think I'm being facetious or anything else, because I'm quite serious about just the. About these concepts, but let me ask you this question, Carolyn, and because I just feel like you know more about this topic than me, although I know a heck of a lot more than the average person about it, but and I'm serious now,
can you do something about that background noise?
Yeah, I can, Carolyn. Let me just walk around the corner here. Now, Carolyn, is there... We know Hitler wasn't married. He never got married. Now, is there any evidence that Hitler actually ever had sex? What I'm wondering is, was Hitler actually possibly a virgin right up to the time that he died?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yes, there's plenty of evidence and people who knew him, and that just... In fact, it said fairly reliably, I'm having a problem with my throat, which I've never had before on air. I don't know. I just keep trying to clear it. It's reliably said that he probably had a son by a French woman during World War I when he was serving on the Western Front. And I will continue going into this when we get back and hope to do something about my throat in the meantime. Okay, hold on, Dave. Don't go away.
Okay.
Earthquakes, violent weather, unemployment, the economy. What are you thinking? If you're thinking preparedness, be at the next Get Prepared Expo, September 9th and 10th, Springfield, Missouri, at the Downtown Expo Center. Learn how to grow your garden, drive down energy costs, survive inflation, prepare your home, and much more. Meet KWTO's instructors, Vincent Finelli and Mark Wright. Tickets only $9 at GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com. What happens next is up to you. Earthquakes, violent weather, unemployment, the economy. Attend John Stadmiller's What's in Store for You and John Moore's Abrupt Climate Change and 35 other seminars at the next Get Prepared Expo. September 9th and 10th, Springfield, Missouri, Downtown Expo Center. Talk with pros on surviving, preparing, defending, and thriving. Grammy winner Steve Voss will perform live. Tickets just $9 at GetPreparedExpo.com. RBN annual subscribers attend one day free. GetPreparedExpo.com. What happens next is up to you.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Are you serious about maintaining or improving your health? If you are, you need Terravim. Terravim offers a full line of vitamins, minerals, and herbs for people serious about enjoying a healthy lifestyle. Our product lines include Alamax, Magnesite, Silver 100, Natura Health Products, Gala Herbs, and Terravim's private label, and undergo rigorous clinical studies by leading researchers and contain physician-grade research-based therapeutic doses of nutrients. All of our vitamin, mineral, and herb products are manufactured under current good manufacturing practices. This is in an FDA-registered production facility, and we guarantee that the ingredients in the supplements are exactly what's on the label. We also provide free consultation for all our products along with general wellness information. All orders over $45 ship free, and all orders received by 3 p.m. ship the same day. When shopping online, enter the coupon code RBN for a 10% discount. To order now, call 1-866-647-4372. That's 1-866-647-4372 or visit terravim.com.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen, for the last 5 minutes or so of the program, and Dave from Massachusetts has brought up the question of whether Hitler was a virgin, whether he ever had sex with a woman. And, you know, I know that this, I'm happy to answer this because I know that this is far more interesting to listeners than what I've been talking about. This is what they'd rather hear. But unfortunately, we do need to lift our minds up to to some of these larger subjects which are causing our problem, you know, with our lack of control over our lives. But anyway, to go to the Hitler question, which is a very good one to bring up, because this is the kind of stuff that's said about Adolf Hitler. Now, I said that he supposedly had a son by a French woman. And I can't go into the evidence right now for that, but it's mostly just, it's kind of, people have said it. And her name is known, and the boy's name is known, and so on. But he did not want to marry, once he decided that he was always very different. He was always full of ideas. He was always very concerned, even as a young, even while he was still in his teens, very concerned with Germany and the fate of Germany and in Austria. He just hated the way Austria was set up. And he always had all these ideas coming through to him, just like, about this, that, and the other thing. And he studied and read, and yet he did, he had very, I would say he was kind of a idealist, and his ideas about women were very proper and so on, but he wasn't a prude. And I'm sure that he had sex because he had quite a few lady friends during those early years. And when he met Eva Braun, she got jealous a lot because he had saw other women. And there's no doubt in my mind that he was sexual and that they had sex together. Now you have different people who appear to be experts and who were there at the time, who, you know, were in his circle, who some say, most say that they thought he had a sex life, when Ava and he had a sex life. But a few of them, I just read Krista Schroeder's book finally, recently, one of his secretaries, and she said she didn't think they ever had sex. I don't know where she comes up with that, but his special valet, who I also read that book, he said certainly they did, and he knew they did, and he was much closer and intimate, you know, because he would come into the room and so on, and he saw them together a lot and so on, than Krista Schroeder was. But this is this also goes to the idea that they try to push that he had something wrong with his genitals and that he only had one, he was missing one of his testicles and so on, and yet there's a doctor who took care of him for, saw him for quite a while in the last year, 2 years, said he examined his genitals, perfectly normal, you know. And this idea, all these things are just ways. Does anybody ever question whether Roosevelt ever really had sex or whether Churchill ever really had sex? Of course, they were married, so supposedly that makes a difference. Well, it looks like we have to go. I thank you for the call, Dave. We could bring that up again next week and talk a little more about it. Thank you, everyone, for listening this week, and come back again on Monday. Bye for now.
Ever climbing.